Have you been listening to the podcast and getting value from the show? If so, I've got a small favor to ask, because over the next few months, we're going to be making some changes to better serve you. Now, I could keep creating episodes based on what I think would be most helpful, but I would much rather get this right. So instead of guessing, I want to understand where you are right now and the real challenges you, your organization, and your team are facing. That's why I've put together a very short 90-second survey. It'll help me better understand you and how I can serve you at a much higher level. And as a thank you, the first 30 people who complete it will receive a free signed copy of one of our books. To take part, just go to the show notes and click the link titled Leadership Survey. Or you can go directly to letsgrowleaders.com/podsurvey. PODSURVEY. It'll take less than 2 minutes. I really appreciate your input. It will genuinely help shape the future of the show.
When we have conflict, it's because the reactive habits of one person are encountering the reactive habits of another person. And neither of them is really in the present moment. They're in their reactive, conditioned, pre-programmed responses, which is often why they can't get out of them.
Hey, it's David, and you're listening to Leadership Without Losing Your Soul. Your source for practical leadership inspiration, tools, and strategies you can use to achieve transformational results without sacrificing your humanity or your mind in the process.
Welcome to the show today, here season 14, and I'm excited to introduce our guest to you. Her name is Susan Freeman, and Susan's an executive coach, team coach, author, speaker, leadership consultant, who brings more than 3 decades of corporate, entrepreneurial, and nonprofit experience to clients. Her groundbreaking approach to coaching creates leadership transformation through the integration of Eastern wisdom derived from more than 25 years studying yoga and yogic philosophy. 25 years is a long time to study anything, and yoga and yoga philosophy has a lot to contribute here. So I'm excited to hear from Susan. Today, we're going to be talking about her latest book. It's called Inner Switch, 7 Timeless Principles to Transform Modern Leadership, and how you can draw your attention inward, become more attuned to yourself and the people around you, growing conscious of their thoughts and energy, and then with those principles, transform your working relationships into harmonious, joyous, effective, and responsive partnerships, which leads to a couple of things I think we all want: dramatic improvements in your effectiveness, business success, and joy. That's a tall order, but I know that we can do it. Susan Freeman, welcome to Leadership Without Losing Your Soul.
Oh, thank you so much, David. It's just an honor to be with you and to be able to engage with you and hopefully begin to bring some of this conversation forward to your listeners.
Oh, I'm confident we're going to be able to supply some real practical things that are going to help people in this process, but to experience those transformations in our effectiveness, business success, and joy. And I'm looking forward to that. But before we get to the joy or the business success, I want to start with you, Susan, and ask you if you could take us back to however far you'd like to go, to your earliest memory of yourself as a leader.
My earliest memory of myself as a leader. Oh, what a great question. Yeah, so I think I've always been, since childhood, a person who naturally was comfortable putting myself out there and sort of being out in front. I'm just wired in such a way that I enjoy, I'm a visionary. I can see possibilities oftentimes before other people see them or that others don't see, but I also specifically can direct my attention and focus to how to bring it about. Yeah. So in lots of different, you know, human development assessments, they call that sort of a manifesting generator. For better or for worse, that's sort of how I've been put together. And so I think that naturally sort of leads one into the field of sort of being out in front and feeling that I can create and bring others along with my vision. And so I think it's, when you made me reflect on it, I think it's probably my very earliest memories.
Yeah. Is there one that stands out for you as you think back in terms of that manifesting generator? If my teenager was here, he would say, GarageBand, that's a band name, manifesting generator.
Yeah, I love that.
So I'm curious if there's a time you're able to remember something like that happening for you.
I've always just been a person who would sort of look at something and say, that needs to be done. I could do that, or I could step into that, or I could do that. There was never a question in my mind that that was a role that I played. So I think it was very transparent to me. I know that in my career, you know, early in my career, I was a founder of an organization, a not-for-profit organization that was the first statewide affiliate of a national organization. And I remember sitting in an office of, because part of my job was enrolling CEOs of the enterprises in the community into memberships in the community. And then from those memberships, we would create these alliances and partnerships with arts and cultural organizations, among other things. And I remember sitting in a CEO's office, and I was, you know, a very bright, young, you know, ambitious woman, and sitting in the CEO offices. And I remember one of the men saying to me, when I described the vision of what we were doing, what I specifically was going to be doing, he looked at me and he said, "You're going to do what?" And I just thought it was the most normal and natural thing in the world to create something out of nothing that no one had ever thought about or ever done. And I clearly saw where it was going and how it was going to get there. And, you know, some 25 years later, it's still an ongoing concern, and many, many amazing things have happened. But I remember he doubted, you know, he doubted. He looked at me with sort of like this incredulousness, like, what would make you do that? And how would you do that? I was so convicted. So I think that some of that is, as I said, just my sort of blind faith in something that I feel is important and matters and in a vision, and being able to bring others along. That's something that I've always resonated with.
Such a powerful, powerful, valuable skill. I mean, they're all valuable, but that one in particular, of that ability. And, you know, and that doubt, it's so interesting. Yeah. And there's a lesson there for us as leaders too. That I'm thinking of a guest we had on the show a number of seasons ago, John Register, amputee, was an Olympic athlete, and then won a silver medal in the Paralympics. And he says, you know, don't ever let your limitation limit somebody else. So it's like, that gentleman couldn't do that for himself, so he couldn't fathom how you could do it.
Now all of a sudden, he was the CEO.
Yeah, and he's trying to impose his limitation on you. You know, so it's a powerful thing there for us to remember.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and that it has a shadow, right? And that it's a gift. Also has a shadow, which is
they all do.
I don't see any limitations. Why does anybody else? I just keep charging, right?
Familiar with that one as well. Let's we all have our shadows. Well, let's get to the book. This is there's so much value here, and in the time we have, we're not going to be able to get through all of it, but I definitely want to give our listeners a taste and some practical things that they can be doing too. Book is called Inner Switch: 7 Timeless Principles to Transform Modern Leadership. And very much based on your practice and that 25 years of study of yoga. And there's a lot to draw here. So I want to just quote from the introduction, because I thought as I was reading this, it's just so powerful when we get into our conversation. So you were asking me before we hit record some of the things that stood out for me. Starts in the introduction where you say, "When leaders make a habit of focusing inward on themselves and their internal state before making a decision, holding a meeting, making a phone call, walking down a hallway, or interacting with staff, they become more open and receptive. They leave the defended structure of their reactive ego mind, having developed a capacity to disengage from fearful narratives derived from past experience, as well as from their anxieties about the future. They are able to reduce conflict in the workplace because they have done so first within themselves." So when you ask me what stands out, I'm like, okay, that's all I need. That entire couple of sentences there is so powerful and transformative if we can get there. And it's something I aspire to. It's a beautiful description, and it's also challenging. Not the easiest thing to do. So when you're talking about these 7 switches and the overall approach here and getting ourselves, this focusing inward, we're not just talking about mindfulness, are we? I mean, that's part of it, but there's more to it than that, right?
Yeah, what a great question. And I appreciate so much the response that you had to that material and that concept, because I think that's what I'm hearing from folks who have read it already, that it's sort of rather radical. It's about how we are internally experiencing our internal landscape that we become attuned to and manage and regulate, so that when we show up with others and in relationship to others and to leading others, we become a clear channel. We are not dragging around our past reactive patterns, our habits of thought or habits of action into the present moment, where they likely will come into conflict with the reactive habits and patterns of others, right? So really the essence here is that when we as leaders can become these clear vessels for longer and longer stretches of time, we are allowing ourselves to see that which is as it is in a very clear way, which provides others with an opening to show up differently. So when we have conflict, it's because the reactive habits of one person are encountering the reactive habits of another person, and neither of them is really in the present moment. They're in their reactive, conditioned, pre-programmed responses, which is often why they can't get out of them. But the leader now has a choice. I can either show up like that, or I can show up differently. And when I show up differently, I can invite others into that space that I create, and they can experience themselves perhaps differently, because I am strong enough and clear enough to hold a space of openness, co-creativity, and collaboration.
Yeah.
They cannot be anything that you are not already experiencing within yourself. It is not possible. So I appreciate the question. And I also want to touch on another additional point that you brought up, David, which is the idea of, is this beyond mindfulness? Yes. How is it different? Mindfulness is now the big buzzword in much of the organizational leadership domain, because in the world in which we are all functioning, we are all grasping for how to navigate differently, because our operating systems from 2019 and before are not adequate. And so much of what we're seeing being put out in the world is, oh, mindfulness, that's it, that's it. If everybody can just be mindful, we can all be well and have mental health and well-being at work. Yes and no. So my response to that is, mindfulness is really about learning to have an empty mind. It is a necessary condition for intentional leadership, and it is not sufficient. A mindfulness, when stress increases, people lapse into their habits. And no amount of mindfulness is going to overcome the need to take responsibility for our inner state of being. It just isn't enough. What's really important is that we learn to become mindless. Mindless. We need to learn to use the mind differently while we act in the world. So this would include techniques such as breathing and centering, some people will call it a meditative practice, towards full integration of the human experience. This means we have to go beyond the solo experience of our own breath to the, how do we connect? How do we integrate and connect? And then what does that afford us in terms of the communication possibilities when we do? So I think that in the fourth chapter of the book, I specifically address this in great detail and offer specific practices and techniques that are practical in application and yet are not simple. They're not simple. This doesn't mean that I don't subscribe to the importance of everyone having a centering practice and a mindful practice. I think that there's tremendous value in that. And what I'm describing, it goes far beyond that. much more complicated and more complex, excuse me.
So I want to take that state that you just described and bring it down to, and I was, as I was reading those words, leaving the defended structure of their reactive ego mind, developing a capacity to disengage from fearful narratives derived from past experience, as well as their anxieties about the future. And the contrasting that with everything that you just described. As I read those words, I was thinking about an interaction I had with a colleague yesterday who brought me, so setting context, had to take some days off last week, family things, a lot of different fun, challenging things, but all good going on. Anyway, I had a very full plate starting the week, got to work quite earlier than I normally do, feeling very focused, I was ready to take care of business, right? In terms of a task focus. Colleague brings me a couple of ideas that definitely had merit, definitely interesting. They weren't something I could act on in the moment. And further discussion about them for me, I was taking as, okay, disruptive. I need to stay focused. I gotta get these things done. And they, turns out later, were upset that I had not validated their ideas. And we ended up spending more time in the discussion of making sure that the working relationship was good and all those sorts of things. And it's one of those, you know, it's, you know, not a big deal, but it's also one of those kind of small frustrations where, and they even said, and then you had a really irritated tone of voice. I'm like, wow, I thought I was very positive at that moment, you know, that kind of thing. And I can't help, as I was reading those words and coming to your work in preparation for today, thinking about how that you described it as a clear vessel. If I am approaching those conversations or able to, in that moment, be able to respond differently, to be in a place that is truly seeing the other and their needs in the moment, as well as owning my own, taking responsibility. Like, I want to take these kind of concepts and take them down to some of these real life things. So, and I'm using myself as the case study because it's the two of us, and hopefully, and our listeners, the long-term listeners know me to some extent. So I figure I'll put myself out there. But you know, these kinds of things are, you know, I'm in the middle of a project and somebody else comes and discounts and interrupts and I get frustrated and now I'm not responding in a healthy way. And I find that as much intellectual knowledge as I have about and teach and all of it, about all of that, that there are those moments where, to use your language, reactive ego, fearful narratives from past experiences or anxieties about the future, boy, do those play such a role in those hardwired responses, and changing that is what these seven switches are all about, if I'm understanding your work correctly.
Wow. Yes. That, what a beautiful, compelling, and vulnerable example that you've shared, and one that we all experience. It happens to every one of us because we're all human. And so I think the first thing that we look at is just the awareness. I have awareness that I had an experience and I noticed that I showed up in a particular way that felt very attuned to my priorities for that particular moment. And yet something went off kilter with a colleague in the relating, in the communication. Yeah. So isn't that interesting? I was really focused. I was certain that I was attuned to what was most important. And then somehow I got over here. What got in the way, right? So the question is, you know, what got in the way? What got in the way of the presence of showing up with giving the colleague the attunement and spaciousness that they wished to receive from you? That's the question. And that is not easy, because we have these programs, right? I'm like really charged up and ready to go to work. And I like have my little list and I'm like working my way through it. And I'm like super focused. And it feels really good to be in that flow. And yet a human that comes into the field is not experiencing that internal landscape. They're experiencing a different one. And if we cannot clear our channel to be present with what that person is experiencing, there could be a disrupted communication, in which case that person feels unseen, unheard, unvalued in that moment. Not that that's a sign of the relationship, but in that moment, they do not feel what they wish to feel. So there's been some kind of an abruption in the, right? And this happens all the time. So the antidote to this is the observation, the noticing what is happening internally for us. So I'm noticing that I'm in a particular emotional and mood space right now. I'm very focused on accomplishment and on action. The communication piece would then be, if the colleague interrupted, you know, hey, I want to give you my full, undivided presence. And this is not a good moment for me to do that. When would be another time that we could set where I can give you my undivided attention? Yeah. And then when you set the time, making sure that you really can get there. Yeah.
Yep.
Because I think a lot of it is these constant interruptions make it hard for us to be fully present because of what you're describing. So we have to learn to manage the disruption and interruptions and set good boundaries. This isn't a good time. Later would be a better time.
It's such a good example of how to go about dealing with a situation like that. And, you know, Susan, as you're talking, I think one of the places that sometimes leaders, and particularly leaders who want to be human-centered and supportive, can get themselves in trouble is that they'll flip into that automatic, pre-programmed, reactive, I need to help, or I need to listen, or I need to interrupt what I'm doing right now.
Yes.
But if we do that, we're not actually serving the relationship or the other person. And it's so much more productive to, for instance, use the response that you just suggested.
Yeah. Make a request so that it works for both of you. Yeah. Making sure that this person feels heard. They know that they're important, that they're valuable, and you want to give them your full presence, and you're unable to do that now. So you don't turn yourself into a pretzel. You can stay focused, and they know that they can not have anxiety because you're now on the calendar with them, and you are going to set aside the time that they require to feel seen and heard. So much of this is just slowing down. It sounds really weird, but what I notice is that we all are moving so quickly now. We're not paying attention. We're not attuning because we're reading phones, reading emails, reading texts, answering phones, checking this, checking that, interrupted all day long. And so the amount, the slice of attention that any one interaction is getting is so small that people are not feeling seen and heard. So part of this is just the slowing down of the speed of interaction. Slowing it down. That doesn't mean that we work harder or longer. It means being clear about what it takes to show up at 100%. And one other thing I often offer to my clients, as I suggest, is when you're learning to develop this muscle, and it is a muscle that can be developed and exercised, just like weights at the gym or training for a race or a marathon or anything that requires building up, this will be new and often difficult in the beginning. And when we build repetitions slowly, we start with small increments. So when I first started doing this work, I would have to center myself 15, 20 times a day. There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with setting a timer on your phone and every hour, once an hour, spend 60 seconds centering, checking in. Where am I? Where's my attention? Where's my energy? Where's my body? Am I thinking about the future? Or am I thinking about the past? Right? Just noticing for 60 seconds and doing some slow, regulated breathing and exhaling slowly, more slowly than the inhale, to begin to activate that relaxation and parasympathetic nervous system affords us the ability to start to clear. So let's say we have a contentious meeting coming up after lunch. Well, if we've just been working pedal to the metal for the last 4 hours and this big meeting is coming up after lunch, it will serve us to clear our own energy prior to entering that meeting. If we go from a difficult, congested morning into that meeting, the moods, emotions, and energies that we're bringing in are going to show up in that meeting, and that contentious conversation can go off the rails so quickly if we don't do our own preparation work. And this is true of every experience that we have, every encounter, every meeting, every presentation. It is so clear to me that when we are checking our own energy with what we are bringing in before we invite others, that the way that we are received and the way that others can engage with us is radically different. So this is about us each taking responsibility for that which we can control, which is what goes on inside of us.
We're talking with Susan Freeman. The name of the book is Inner Switch: 7 Timeless Principles to Transform Modern Leadership. And Susan, you've been sharing some real practical ways of looking at these kind of moments where all of the, I'm going to summarize reactive ego mind, past experiences, future anxiety as the junk in our heads, right?
That, and in our bodies.
And in our bodies, yes, the embodiment principle as well. So all of that stuff, the accumulation there, that gets in the way of us having the effective relationships, the effective leadership that we want. So the 7 switches are about helping us. I love your language here of moving us from unconscious reactor to conscious responder, which in the example that we've just been playing through is what I would hope to, if I have another shot at that one, to move from the unconscious reactor to the next time conscious responder. So the 7 switches, and I would love to maybe in a sentence have you run through the 7 of them, give this a sentence description, and then in the time that we have, maybe we can dive deeper into one or two of them.
Yeah, great question. So the 7 principles are a linear sequential system to help Western thinkers, Western leaders see the possibility of beginning at some point along this journey and working their way through the entire sequence so that they could show up in the way that you and I just described in that example. All right. So the first principle is open. And open is about embracing the beginner's mind, being open to that which is new and unknown. We can't learn something if we believe we already know everything. So the first principle is being open. I don't know what I don't know. Okay. The second principle is learn. So learning is about really learning to understand the limitations of our minds and the reliance of the brain and the mind on conditioned response. 90% of our thinking patterns are at the subconscious level. Only 10% are conscious and rational. And yet we believe it's the inverse. So we are literally walking balls of pre-programmed subconscious reactive thinking patterns. And so if we are not aware of that, we don't learn that and what that limitation will be, we will continue to bring the past into the present and future over and over again. The third is letting go. So letting go is learning to move from these stressful reactive patterns from the past to the ability to consciously respond in the present. And that's what we've just discussed in this example. The fourth principle is drop in. Drop in is the most in-depth of the chapters in the book of the principles, because it is a blueprint for learning how to experience the way of being that arises when we become a neutral observer. So this is where the deep appreciation and affinity for yogic philosophy and yogic practice comes in, because it has to have an embodied component. We can't think our ways into this. This is a full out embodied experience, which means,
Susan,
we have
can
to
you
have...
just take a moment while we're in the middle of this, since you've used the word, what do we mean by embodied? There's a lot of folks listening who probably have never heard that or don't exactly know what that means.
Yeah, I love the question. So we as Westerners are pretty much trained to think about, even in our healthcare system, we have a brain and a mind, and everything above the neck is one thing, and everything that goes on below it is something altogether different. We don't tend to think of it as an integrated system. So when we have thoughts and we have reactive patterned, conditioned responses to stimuli. There's a thought pattern that happens that goes on in the brain. And there's also one that goes on in the gut and one that goes on in the heart. And we have three brains, a gut brain, a heart brain, and a brain brain. And all of these brains are operating all the time. They're gathering billions and billions of bits of sensory data. So if we're not aware and we just think we're only the brain brain and the thinking pattern, and we're not paying attention to what's going on in my body, what's happening to my breathing, what's happening to my palms, is my jaw tense, are my eyes locked, right? Am I getting butterflies in my belly? People have all these bodily responses to stimuli. If they're not paying attention to them, they can override them and pretend as if they're not happening. But really what's happening is the body is saying, whoa, this isn't safe. Don't do this. Don't go there. Don't say that. Right? So learning to attune to what's happening within our bodies is an important part of knowing how to become this clear vessel, because you can feel it. I even say in the book, trust your body, because your body never will lie to you. It doesn't know how to lie. The brain will lie to you all day long because you can override it with all kinds of rationalization. I don't really believe that. I don't really think that. And your stomach is going doing flip-flops, right? If you're not aware that your stomach is doing flip-flops before a big interview and you're like, I'm cool, everything's fine, and your stomach is going, chances are you're not fine. Chances are checking in to see what's actually happening in your body is going to support you to be able to show up more fully and with all of your presence than if you just try to override it with your brain and try to pretend as if it's not happening.
So embodiment,
that's what I mean
that,
by embodied.
That full integration.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
The full integration, the awareness and the knowledge that you can observe what is happening in your body at any moment, and it's free. And we learn to pay attention to that because that is giving us data about how to engage with the world. Yeah.
And that was in the context of number four, drop in.
That's drop in. Yep. And number five, integrate, is about bringing all of this together. So we've just talked about that, bringing body, mind, heart, and being together so that we can act spontaneously in balance in the present moment. And number six is connect, learning to tune in to your own internal state of harmony before you communicate with another person. You see, that which you seek from another always starts within you, always. And then the final principle of the book is illuminate. So when you have mastered or are on the path to mastery of these other six principles, you will then cultivate a space where others will feel safe enough to be able to release their unconscious reactivity, because you've created a safe, clear vessel. They can respond powerfully in the present. And this is where we can start to help elevate the quality and caliber of everyone's capacities, and the leadership that everyone can bring can be advanced.
All right. So Susan, you mentioned that these seven are linear, that they build. Mm. Yes. So let's go back to the first one, open, embracing. You said embracing like the beginner's mind. Mm-hmm. We don't know it all. We can't possibly know it all. There's so much we don't know, and being open to the new and unknown. So we talk a lot here at Let's Grow Leaders about, in our concept of courageous cultures and asking questions in order to draw out the best thinking of every team member and truly being desirous of that information and knowledge, and obviously can't incorporate it all. That's the wrong word. We can't incorporate it all. We can't act on every suggestion that's made, but we can certainly incorporate. When you have that discussion, there is a tendency often in people, and I'm going to take it to frontline and middle level managers sometimes, who honest and with, they're speaking sincerely, like, I don't need another idea. Mm-hmm. I don't need any, I just need everybody to do what we know how to do. If we could, before we do that, I can't be open to anything. I got to get this done.
Hey.
And that's, it's kind of the first objection or first concern yeah. that people will have. And it's a natural concern. So as we're talking about this openness and learning and these first several steps, and we don't get to let go until step three, but when we're thinking about these things and the responsibility that leaders and managers feel to those outcomes that we're responsible to achieve, that always seems to be a tension in these kinds of discussions. I know that you have some insight around that, so I'm curious how you would help us to navigate that tension as we're trying to embrace opening and learning and so on.
Yeah, such a great question. Well, what I've observed is that many people believe that we can just skip over all this and just focus on what we all need to do. If it were that simple, everyone would be producing breakthrough results all day long. And that is unfortunately not what we are seeing. In fact, most of the time we're seeing the exact opposite. We're seeing dysfunctionality, compensatory patterns, breakdowns at every different level, you know, changing of direction, blaming, shaming, everything in between. Mm-hmm. So it clearly isn't about us just all doing what we need to do, is it? Like, because what we all think we need to be doing is very much dependent on the filters through which we see. So much of this is that we're not all seeing anything the same way, even though we believe we all share business goals. I've rarely worked with a leadership team where the team said, we don't know what we're supposed to be doing. We don't know what the goal is. They all know what the goals are. Why isn't it happening? Why are they not achieving them? It has very little to do with not knowing what the goals are. It has to do with all of this. It has to do with, I don't trust you. I don't think you respect me. I don't think you listen. We don't agree on how that should be done. We don't agree on who should be part of that discussion. I feel left out. I feel unheard. I feel unseen. I feel disrespected. I feel unsafe.
Yes.
I feel unsafe. So we have to wrest back this idea of those things not mattering and focusing only on the result and slow it down, back it up and say, we act on what we care about. And if we can slow things down to the point where we can create enough safety for everyone to have a chance to speak about what they care about and feel seen and feel heard, not in a reactive way, but in a I'm just listening to you way. I don't have attachment to what you say because yeah. I'm really curious about your perspective.
Yes.
Right. If we can get there, now we're getting somewhere because Absolutely. Now we can start having conversations that matter about what is getting in the way. What is stopping us from making this deadline? What is stopping us from having everyone be able to come to a meeting and talk about what got in the way? Yeah. Where we have our real conversations at the water cooler, but when we're sitting in meetings, everything's just fine. And then as yeah. soon as we leave the meeting, we start having the real meeting, which is the I'm not doing what they said and I don't agree to that. Right.
And that it's just so important. You know, we've talked to so many guests and there are so many people talking about the concepts of listening and inclusion and trust and connection and relationships and all of the different elements of all the different things that get in the way that you just described. And what you're really laying out for leaders here with these seven switches is a very practical way. And it's, as you said, it's straightforward, but it's not simple.
Yeah.
It's, you know, you can do it, but it does take intentionality and practice and work to do it, to develop those for yourself. But in doing that and in doing those things, you gain the capacity to listen in a way that answers that I feel disrespected, I don't feel heard, I don't feel seen. Okay, well, as a leader, how do you show up as a leader in a way that person feels heard, respected, seen, valued? It's one thing to say we need to do that as a leader, but the actual ability to step into that conversation when we've been dealing with all of our own pre-programming and issues and everything else throughout our body is a whole nother ballgame. And that's the work that you give leaders the opportunity to do with these seven switches. That's the way I would describe what you're saying.
Wow. Just gratitude for the brilliant summary. That is it. You've completely nailed it. It is critically important and yet not simple. And so in our overprogrammed, reactive, distracted society, many people will say, well, I don't have time for that. And I'm like, your example you just gave is, I had to set aside so much more time to clean up the problem that was created because I didn't spend the 60 seconds to get myself to become the clear vessel before the conversation or make a request to schedule it at a different time. So it isn't about the time. This actually doesn't take more time. What it takes is the intentionality to own what it is that we are producing and creating in the world by how we are showing up as human beings. And leaders have such an opportunity, and I dare say a great responsibility, to show up differently in the era in which we are all trying to thrive right now, which is volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous, and everyone is completely stressed out. And nothing is the same as we are accustomed to, and everything is being recreated and reinvented, and everything is in flux. And that requires an agility for us as human beings that I think we are not prepared to step into quite yet, which is why I think the moment for this book is really now. These timeless principles offer us a blueprint that is achievable with intentionality and a desire to spend a little bit of energy and time developing this self capacity. And once you do, you own it forever. You can never go back to not having it. You'll always have it. And it will affect every aspect of your life, not just the way you show up at work, but your family relationships, your relationships with your children, with your friends, your community, your society, and I dare say the world.
I love that, Prince. That's one of the best parts of doing leadership development, I think, is there's not a program that we ever do where somebody doesn't talk to us afterwards and say, you know, this is really going to help me with my team and with my work, but gosh, this is going to help at home. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, the way that you say this in the earlier in the book is, you know, work-life balance. There is no you at work and you at home. You are you, and who you are, you're going to be consistently who you are. And that's so important.
Yeah. Wherever we go, there we are, as John Kabat-Zinn says.
All right. We're talking with Susan Freeman. The book is Inner Switch, Seven Timeless Principles to Transform Modern Leadership. Susan, listeners are listening going, yes, I need this. I definitely want to experience all of these things and learn how to engage in these seven steps. Where should they go? Where should they connect with you?
Yeah. Well, I welcome opportunities to connect in a variety of ways. The easiest thing to do is to go to my website, which is www.susansfreeman.com, S-U-S-A-N, S as in Sam, Freeman, F-R-E-E-M-A-N.com. And there you will have the links to the 6 or 7 online retailers where the book is available for purchase. Also, a print version as well as an ebook is available currently. And that way you can just hook in and go directly to whichever one you prefer to give your business to. There's also an opportunity to connect with me through a contact page. Also, listeners could connect with me through my LinkedIn page, which is also Susan S. Freeman. I'm on LinkedIn and I have a fairly extensive profile there. I have over 550 or 600 articles that have been written and blogs. I have podcasts. I have resources. There's a downloadable version of my first book available for a free, if that is something that you would be interested in. And I welcome the chance to, you know, to connect with you individually to see how I might assist you either in terms of being a speaker, offering a workshop, a webinar, a lunch and learn, or any variety of ways to sort of help facilitate these conversations and develop these practices until such time where listeners are really comfortable that they can do this fully on their own.
Fantastic. All right. So there you go. SusanSFreeman.com and all of the other opportunities that go along with it. So Susan, towards the end of the book, and I want to kind of tee this up because we're talking about stress in this section, and everybody, we all deal with stress in different ways. And towards the end of the book, you talk about how leaders manage stress and relax, and there's all the dysfunctional ways that we do it and the addictions it creates and all of that kind of thing. And of course, there's a yoga metaphor for creating tension and then allowing relaxation and that you spell. And we haven't spent a whole lot of time in the world of yoga yet. So I thought this might be a great place to go to talk about how all of the things that we've been talking about really combine together to give leaders a way to deal with and manage that. And setting this up with, and you quote another, and I've heard this in various places, but when we're something along the lines of when we're stressed, we don't rise to the level, we descend to the level of our practice, which I thought was a beautiful way of talking about. So I'm going to give you the floor and let's talk about stress.
Yeah, the most pervasive experience on the planet, isn't it? There is no one of us that's escaping without the experience of stress. And yet we know from the research that all stress isn't bad. We need some stress in order to maintain engagement and activity and performance. Where it becomes a problem was when it becomes, when it overtakes our capacity to use it to sort of supercharge a particular activity and it becomes a way of living. And then we're reacting. We're constantly back on our heels instead of sort of relaxed and centered. And so one of the things I think that having a yoga practice of any sort does is that we have the experience on the yoga mat of putting our body into a posture that probably creates a lot of discomfort initially, or it could, depending upon your practice, some of the postures can create a lot of discomfort. And yet what matters is that you just observe the discomfort. You observe that I am feeling a lot of sensation and I am noticing that my thoughts are starting to get a little bit active. And I'm thinking about how much this hurts, what I'm going to make for dinner. The person on the mat next to me is doing it better than I am. Yesterday I could do it and today I can't, right? What we're noticing is that that sensation is a window into our psychology. So if we look at it as a window into the psychology of our inner experience, we can go, oh, isn't that interesting? Nothing is taking place here except between my ears. I'm having sensation. Just sensation, no story around it. So yoga will teach us how to create a distance between the sensation we are experiencing and the story we make up about the sensation. So we use our breath on the yoga mat when we notice that sensation becoming very intense. Oh, this hurts. I'm starting to notice a buildup of sensation. Ah, right. So if I back out of the posture a little bit, and I breathe and exhale and let my body relax. Now what's happening? Oh, no more story. All of a sudden the sensations are backed off. We call that in yoga going to the edge. So what I say in the book is that life gives us opportunities to practice yoga in every moment of the day because all of life is a yoga mat. It's edges all day long. Oh, I'm getting tense. I'm getting tense. I don't like what she said. I don't like what she said. I don't want to do that. You can't make me, right? Those are all edges. So if we just learn to attune to what is happening in my body and my sensations and my thoughts at this moment, and what can I do about that? Yoga affords us the ability to have an experience of ourself, to practice that in a safe way so that we can become a neutral observer. And once we learn how to do that on a yoga mat, we can do that all day long in any situation, off the mat as well as on.
It's so applicable in so many different ways as you were describing that, since I love that statement, it's all edges all day long. that's the name of Susan's next book. It's all edges.
Perish that thought, David.
I know. As an author, right? All the authors out there are like, you know,
that would take me right to the edge.
That's it. I'm done until the next one comes creeping along. But you know, I have been listeners know I've been pursuing ultra distance running over the last several years, and this year I have been learning, doing some reading so far. I've been learning that process of really slowing down, breathing deeply, creating that awareness, going to the edge of whatever that discussion. So it's a very active state in running, where yoga is a more of a what is it? It's a static, but very active static. I don't know how you describe that, but it's like, you're not moving, but you're doing a lot of, there's a lot going on, where running is like this, okay, this movement, but it's the same thing of hitting that edge, breathing deep, slowing down, creating that separation. And it's amazing what we're capable of when we can create that separation and become that neutral observer, and what your body actually needs, what the relationship needs, and it's different. It's never just one thing.
I love that you brought that up, because I have heard that from other long distance runners as well, that they get into that zone, and the way they describe their experience is very similar to the way I would describe my experience when I'm on the yoga mat. So I don't say that yoga is the way or the only way. Clearly it is not. There are many paths. It's just the way that I learned in order to heal my own body. And when I learned it and I saw its applicability for a larger context, I decided to sort of, you know, put that out into the world in this way, because it is authentic to me. I think that any way that listeners can find to create distance between the reactive thought that they're having and a reactive experience is going to be useful. The idea here, the invitation, is that when we can become neutral observers of our conditioned responses, of our thinking patterns, we can become clear vessels and clear channels to hold space for our own experience. When we can do that consistently, we can become truly great at holding space for others. And that is what leadership is all about.
Yes, it is. And when we talk about being the leader you'd want your boss to be, there it is, that movement of, you know, and it's so interesting to me. What we really have been talking about today is, when we're talking about human-centered leadership, the first human you need to be centered on and lead is yourself. And yes, the opening comments that you made about that that process of the work that's happening inside for you is what you're bringing to everything that you're doing. And so I just can't encourage listeners enough, as you're listening to the show, take a look at the seven switches here. Susan has done a great job of walking you through, as she said, this process. Inner switch, seven timeless principles to transform modern leadership. Attune, start with that awareness, that openness, embracing the fact that there's a lot that's new, there's a lot that's unknown, and going from there. Susan, thank you so much for being a guest with us today.
David, the pleasure is all mine. Thank you. Thank you so much for allowing me to share this message with your listeners, and I hope that it has an impact.
I know it will. Until next time, be the leader you'd want your boss to be.
The UPS store is making packing and shipping Easter gifts quicker than ever this year with UPS Air. How quick? Quicker than a walk around the park. Quicker than eating all the Easter candies. Quicker than finding a golden egg that you know is stuffed with cash. When you ship UPS Air at the UPS store, your items arrive on time or your money back. Guaranteed at no extra cost. Exclusively at the UPS store U.S. retail locations. Send Easter joy on time at the UPS store. Visit theupsstore.com/airguarantee for full details. Terms and conditions apply.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.